When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World Series. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. We apologize for missing last week. There was some illness in our households, and so it made sense to take a little bit of a break. But we are back before the end of the season, and there's a couple of things we want to talk about, but we're going to start with some good news. You know, it's been a rough season for Mets fans for a number of reasons, but at the end of the year here, we're getting some milestones passed, and two of them were passed yesterday. We recorded this on Thursday, the 28th. Yesterday, Kodai Senga recorded his 200th strikeout for the Mets, which, obviously 200 strikeouts is a big deal, but I did not realize how few Mets had achieved that goal until, Chris, you wrote an article about it. Was he only, I think it's the, was it the fourth Met to do that? Sorry, 13th Met, but only the third, the first since 2019 to do it, and the 13th overall. Considering how many great pitchers the Mets have had over their tenure, it's a little shocking that only 13 Mets have done that.
Yeah. I was a little surprised to hear that or to read it, really, and looking that up. I think Gary Cohn mentioned he put the season into context with the fact that Senga's in his rookie season and doing it. So he had put it into both a Mets rookie context and a Japanese pitcher rookie contest text. And it's pretty wild how rare it is. And obviously with some of these guys that were, that are Mets pitching legends, like Tom Seaver, that's somebody who did it a whole bunch of different times.
Right.
But the number of pitchers that have done it is still much lower than you would expect. Matt Harvey never did it. That seems absolutely insane, right?
Right.
But it's true. Even DeGrom did it, I think, two, maybe three times. Just not something that's that easy to do. And I think, you know, we've hit on this point, and so has the SNY broadcast, as the season has gone on, it just feels like Senga is getting better. I thought it was really nice to get to just listen to Ron Darling talk about his start last night. Sort of reflecting on that, you know, talking about this pitcher who has obviously has talent, but has been learning how to adjust on the fly. Of course, last night for the first time all year, his ghost fork allowed one home run.
Right.
but you look at what he did. He came into a season, and maybe it helped a little bit that two future Hall of Fame pitchers were at the top of the rotation. And their injuries and struggles in the early going were much more of a focus than the fact that Senga, he got off to a decent start. He wasn't terrible by any means, but he wasn't dominant from day one. But all of that is to say he did something special already. And it feels like starting next season, picking up where he leaves off at the end of this season, having made his final start now, that there's really the potential for something special there. A few weeks ago, I floated the Cy Young contention, and unfortunately the couple of pitchers who were ahead of him in the ERA didn't really falter. over that span, but depending on where certain free agent pitchers sign, you go into next season and sure, some of these other great pitchers out there, like I'm sure people will expect to bounce back from Spencer Strider. If Blake Snell wins the Cy Young and ends up staying in the National League on any of his 15 teams, then there are going to be some other pitchers who are in that mix. But Senga went from intriguing, unknown, really, at the time the Mets signed him, to somebody who should be in that preseason mix for Cy Young contenders. And that is it's pretty great. So,
yeah, I mean, the fact that he's going to finish in the top three in ERA in the league, he's going, you know, he passed the 200 strikeout threshold. Like all of the sort of traditional metrics that you look at for somebody in Cy Young contention are all there. But I think if you take all of that outside of the, you look at the numbers and that's one thing, and that's great. We should never ignore the numbers. But when you factor in, you know, first year in America, different ball, all that other stuff, it really does come out to a pretty special season. And a season that, you know, for a relatively lost season for the Mets, it is nice to see something so positive happen with one of their players. So, yeah, that's very fun. What's also very fun is that we have been talking about how there was, as we put it, an outside shot at Francisco Lindor getting a 30-30 season. But yesterday, over the course of a doubleheader, he went from an outside shot to clinching it by hitting three home runs in one day. So, you know, look, 30-30, we talked about this recently on the show in relation to Howard Johnson and a couple other players that had achieved that goal. But it is, maybe this is just because of the age that I am, I still think of 30-30 as one of the coolest achievements in baseball that you can do. And Lindor is somebody who, I mean, it's very hard for me to not love Francisco Lindor as a Met. He's been such a positive presence on the club. And again, in a season that hasn't meant that much, this is a really nice little capstone on that season for Lindor. I know you were particularly excited about the 30-30 season, so I want to hear you talk about this.
Sure. I think it puts Lindor into a very special place among Mets players. And you look back and it's a little bit surprising that there weren't a couple of other Mets who accomplished the feat. But when you're joining that very short list of other players who have done that in franchise history, I hope that makes anybody who may still have any doubts or complaints about who Lindor is as a player appreciate what he's doing. It's not easy to do. Obviously, the changes in the rules have made stolen bases easier for everybody. And I guess if I'm, you know, I should be consistent. When Acuna hit the, I don't know what it is now, but it was like 40-60 season or whatever. And I'm not sure what he stands at today. But I remember looking at that and going like, oh, well, it's a hell of a lot easier to steal a base now than it used to be. But now that the Mets have somebody who has reached a notable number in both of those categories, I will gladly take it.
Well, also, you know, look, Lindor, this is Lindor's best stolen base season of all time. But if you take out 2020 for the shortened season, you know, the 3 years prior to that, he had 15, 25, and 22 stolen bases. You know, he only had 10 in 2021, but that was a down year for him in general. In 2022, he had 16 stolen bases, and now he has 30. So, you know, obviously, we can't say that the rule changes limited his stolen base ability. It obviously helped in some way, but it's not like he was a two stolen base guy who suddenly stole 30 bases.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. And the fact that he plays an excellent shortstop.
Yeah.
It, you know, while doing all of this at the plate is pretty rare. So the fact, you know, Corey Seager, looking at just some of the stats overall, Seager has just been maybe the best hitter in baseball when healthy this year. So, at the moment, and in all likelihood, this won't change over the next 3 days. Seager's got the F-WAR lead among shortstops. But Lindor is right up there, you know, as of this morning, leading National League shortstops, second overall in the game, in that metric. And that's somebody, you look at what he's done in his time with the Mets, and even though there was that little bit of a slow start in his first season with the team, the overall body of work there is great. And I don't think people should take that for granted. And I think that's important to remember as people who are supportive and appreciative of him, as well, that in all likelihood, he won't win an MVP, as a, you know, member of the Mets, but playing in the same league as Mookie Betts and Acuna, that's not really your fault. Sort of a product of timing and luck a little bit. If, you know, thinking about where some big name free agents might land this winter, if Shohei Ohtani stays in the American League, next season, there's an opportunity for somebody to win that MVP award with Mike Trout now consistently missing time year after year, where he went from the sure thing MVP to a very good player who just can't get anywhere near 600 plate appearances. And then Ohtani shifting into a hitting only role for a year. Okay. There, that opportunity might present itself. But in the National League, Betts isn't going anywhere. Acuna's not going anywhere. You're certainly not rooting for injuries. So, if Francisco Lindor is just the second or third best in the league, but he's doing it year in and year out, that is somebody, especially with the way just his, the person he is, right?
Yes.
That is somebody who I'm very happy that we get to root for on the Mets, and the type of player that, you know, in conjunction with ownership that has a lot of money, you can look at 2024 and have some hope that this team will bounce back if they build properly around him. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then the last of the sort of nice moments that may happen before the end of the season is that Pete Alonso is at 46 home runs with 4 games to play. And a 50 home run season would be, I mean, it would be great for so many reasons, right? But the fact that Alonso is as young as he is and has already had 150 home run season, had a 40 home run season last year, you know, it's just, it is, we don't see power like this come around very often, especially not with the Mets. And we've had a lot of talk on this podcast about how we think the Mets should extend Alonso and how they hope they do. If he finishes the season with 50 home runs for a year that has not been his best, you know, Alonso, if you recall, had an injury that put him on the injury list that he came back from, some would say, too quickly. You know, so he had a bit of a dry spell for his power after that injury. But, you know, look, he has a little bit less of a little bit lesser batting average this season. You know, he batted 220, he batted 222 his time of the recording. Last year it was 271. His rookie year it was 260. So he's, you know, below his career norms in that perspective. And he's a little bit down from an on base perspective, but he's slugging just about as much as he ever has. And, you know, he's just an incredibly impressive player. And, he's already, this is already his second best power season in terms of home runs. And, yeah, it, again, in a season with not much to root for, an Alonso power surge this weekend will be a wonderful thing to root for.
Absolutely, yeah. And if Francisco Lindor can crank 3 home runs in one day over the course of 2 games, Pete Alonso has a chance to hit a few more here and end the season with 50. And I think we've become sort of accustomed to finding the individual achievements over the years as Mets fans. I obviously, I think the bar is different now in terms of what's acceptable from the team as a whole. And I've tried to stay optimistic about that, despite the fact that they are finishing with a losing record this year. But yeah, it's a nice thing to get to do. And I don't know, there's just some part of me that's, I don't know if it's happy is not the right word, but knowing that there are a lot of other teams out there that will make the wild card round that wish they had a hitter like Pete Alonso in the middle of their lineup.
Yep.
There's some satisfaction in that. And I think this, look, I don't want to say he's Barry Bonds right now in terms of his power, but I think even similar to Lindor, even like in the moment, those of us who are very supportive of these players might not realize, because it, you know, like with Alonso especially, it feels like he's our guy. We mostly remember either reading about him or seeing him in Brooklyn, you know, watching him come up through the minor league ranks. There was a lot of doubt about what he could do as a major league player. And I think it can be kind of easy to just downplay who that player is a little bit because you're so familiar with them. Where if, I don't know, if you're a fan of the Twins, right? They don't have there's not a 50 home run hitter in that lineup.
Right.
And that's not a big knock on the Twins. They are a team that's capable of scoring runs.
Yeah, they're making the playoffs. The Mets aren't, right. But you know.
Right. Yeah. Totally. But I'd imagine that a few other teams will would be very, very happy to get Pete Alonso in the middle of their lineup. And I don't think anybody who listens to this podcast or reads anything we write about the Mets is a Pete Alonso hater. So I think I'm preaching to the choir here. Yeah. But you never know when in the middle of the season you have I don't know the best way to describe them. Idiots on much, much larger outlets talking about baseball, trying to, you know, just talk shit about Pete Alonso not being a good teammate or whatever. Like, just total nonsense that's out there. You know, I would hope that most people see that for what it is. And again, just appreciate what Pete Alonso is.
Yes. So before we wrap up today, we do want to talk about the baby Mets a little bit. This has been the nickname obviously given to a couple of the younger players, specifically Francisco Alvarez, Mark Vientos, and Brett Beatty. Is anyone else you would throw in that baby Mets category, or are those the three?
I feel like Mauricio is a latecomer, but he can get lumped into the group since all four of them started the year in Syracuse, which is kind of hard to believe.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about them then. So, you know, Alvarez got off to a hot start, but has significantly cooled down, but is going to end the season with, you know, at least 23 home runs is where he is now. And he's really proven himself to be a capable major league catcher, which was the knock against him. I mean, the whole time that we've been talking about Francisco Alvarez, the things I have heard are he's going to hit, but he's not going to necessarily be be able to stick a catcher. And, you know, again, Chris Stradamus, the theme of this year's podcast, you know, you saw him catch and you thought, no, I think this guy can stick there. And it looks like you were probably right about that. So, you know, real quickly, in 10 words or less, no, I'm kidding. You know, take as much time as you want. But, you know, how are you feeling about Alvarez? Let's start there. How was Alvarez's first season playing regularly in the majors? How is that sitting with you right now?
That sits very well. And I think there's obviously some room for improvement, sort of just in his overall offensive production. But for a 21-year-old who came up, seemed to immediately have the respect of Max Scherzer in particular.
Yep.
Scherzer had spoken highly of him after a rehab start in Binghamton last year, continued to do so this year. I know people might have mixed feelings about the way Scherzer obviously fared in the wild card series last year, and then about his just sort of honest approach to answering everything after he was traded this year. But that's not easy to do. And it's not that every veteran just hates rookies or anything like that. But
right.
Yeah, Max Scherzer, by all accounts, including his own, is a lunatic when it comes to like the day he pitches. So, so to get somebody like that on board, to go out there, he just seems completely unfazed by any of the things that might typically intimidate somebody coming in and trying to take over as a starting catcher. But he did it so well that it was apparent within what, 2-3 weeks of him getting called up that he is the starting catcher now.
Yep.
I'm just looking at his overall offensive, you know, weighted runs created plus tends to be the catch all that I like the most on the hitting side of things. Yoda has some thoughts about Francisco Alvarez in the background.
Yeah.
But obviously, right now he ranks sort of in the middle of the pack for catchers who have racked up a decent number of plate appearances this year. But to do that at 21, there's definitely an opportunity to grow. And to me, when you just look at his overall game, he's a top 10 catcher by Fangraphs wins above replacement already. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So he's not, Mike Piazza yet. And I don't know, maybe on the batting average and on base percentage side of things, he won't get to that point. But most hitters, especially ones that are that young, tend to improve as their 20s go on. Obviously, there are exceptions all the time, but I wouldn't expect him to get worse at hitting.
Right.
And even if he only hits like this and catches the way he catches,
an incredibly valuable major leaguer.
Totally. So thoroughly impressed with what he's done. The fact that sending him back to Syracuse was never a serious option. It was one that was written about a little bit, but it even seemed foolish to write about it at that time. Pretty damn good.
Yeah. He's going to be a part of this team for a long, long time. And like you said, even if this is generally where his ceiling lays, he's an incredibly valuable player. If he can cut down on the strikeouts, if he can just generally improve his eye at the plate, man, that has to be considered one of the best Met developments of a homegrown player in a very, very long time. You know, catchers don't typically hit like this. I could have ended that sentence after the word hit. Catchers don't typically hit. So, you know, just to have a guy who's a legitimate power threat and an above average catcher in the game right now, man, you have to just tip your hat to that. That's incredible. So next up is Brett Beatty. And Beatty is having a rough season. you know, moments of greatness have shown through, but you know, currently OPS plus tends to be a place where I look just for a quick scan of a player. The OPS plus of 67, 100 is league average, and you know, just isn't really I don't know. I don't know if he looks overmatched. I don't know if he's not making adjustments, but he certainly isn't looking like the player that certain fans were convinced he was, and that he was, quote, rotting in AAA.
Yeah. I think it's far too early to give up on him.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course.
Which is something that'll... I can't help it. Yoda has thoughts about every baby Met.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, are you going to have to change Yoda's... Have you already changed Yoda's Instagram handle?
Yeah, he's Yoda the New Yorkie, too.
Okay, there we go. Just making sure. Okay.
Yeah, to capture his ubiquitousness throughout the state.
Right, of course. Yes. When people think New York, they think the Statue of Liberty, they think Empire State Building, and Yoda.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know, with Beatty, I'm not too worried about a situation where he doesn't get another shot at the major league level by any means. I'd be a little bit surprised if the Mets went in to the offseason and acquired an everyday third baseman when they have, you know, the potential, and we'll get to Vientos in a minute, but Mauricio, Beatty, Vientos, all theoretically could be options at third base. I don't think having three players who are maybes at a position is a reason to go in and say, like, okay, we're not doing anything at third base. But I'd still be surprised if they went and did that. So yeah, having said that, I don't think any one of those three should be a lock for that job to start the year, but it's definitely too early to give up on Beatty. There obviously is a lot of talent there. I don't know how useful time at AAA is for him right now, because every time he's there, he just destroys it. But I don't think that he's just some quad A guy. And obviously there are slightly different expectations in terms of like what their prospect stock was, but it's a little bit similar to Kelenic out in Seattle after the Mets traded him, right? I hope there's some improvement in store for Beatty, like there has been for Kelenic, although in his case, he really had a nice hot start to this season and then struggled significantly for a couple of months before kicking the cooler and breaking his toe or foot or whatever bone it technically was. But it is somebody I just look because he's a little bit younger than Beatty, but you can kind of see a little bit of a parallel in their first couple of seasons. Not full-time major league playing time, hitting well below league average for a couple of years. You know, age-wise, they're 1 year apart based on their first and second seasons. But I'd like to think that there is a corner that could be turned, and it's definitely too soon to conclude anything else. So,
yes, absolutely. Yeah, my only other note on Beatty is just that, you know, like you said, I don't think the Mets are going to look for a third baseman this offseason as one of their, you know, top priorities. However, I also don't think any of the guys you mentioned are enough of a lock that if a third baseman that they felt could really improve the team became available, I hope the Mets don't avoid that player because of three maybe kind of sort of third baseman they have in the system.
Oh yeah, totally. And a really nice thing about everything that we talked about with Alvarez is that we're all super confident in the catching side of things, So if they go out and acquire somebody who blocks these guys at third base, DH is still there.
Yep.
You know, if that corner gets turned, to me, Beatty's struggles in the field are slightly more concerning than the ones at the plate, because at least, I mean, I don't know. It's not like he's a butcher defensively, but we've seen him put up a good month at the major league level as a hitter. And obviously we know the game is all about constant adjustments, and a month doesn't guarantee anything moving forward, but we've seen a little bit more of that success. So I don't know, maybe whether it's one of the other guys who's already in the organization or somebody who comes in from outside, if he only focuses on hitting in a DH role and plays a little bit at third base, maybe that's a path to turning that corner. So thank you, Francisco Alvarez, if that happens.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So up next is Mark Vientos. Vientos is maybe, of all the guys on this list, I feel like Vientos has the maybe the least difference in opinion about him. Like, there were folks who thought that Beatty was going to be Brooks Robinson, RIP Brooks, by the way. There are folks who thought that Alvarez was going to be Mike Piazza. There are folks who thought that Ronnie Mauricio was going to be Francisco Lindor. I don't think there's anybody who thought that Mark Vientos was going to be the next, you know, power hitting first baseman for the majors. And he's, you know, people sort of agreed he could be a nice prospect or something, but he's maybe the least lauded of the guys that the Mets have, have in their, in the baby Mets, you know, sort of classification here. And most of this season, he looked like maybe people were correct about him not being a super successful major league player. However, in September, just in time for Dollars for Dingers season, I should say, he has gotten off to a bit of a power surge, and he started to maybe look a little bit more like there's a useful major league player in there. I am still somewhat skeptical of Vientos as a major leaguer. How do you feel about this, Chris?
Pretty much the same. I will say what he's done in September has been pretty good, especially compared to, say, what Beatty's done recently. He's hit 247, 301, 506. Obviously, that's very power dependent, but it's a 119 WRC plus. I don't know. It's not too shabby. It's not quite enough for me to buy into him being able to do it. But if I'm saying that Brett Beatty showing us something over the course of a month is at least a flash of something to maybe to hold on to, then it's only fair to give Vientos maybe a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. I do think I'd still have him of the three guys who might get some of that playing time, whether it's at third base or DH, I'd still have him third under Beatty and Mauricio. It'll be very interesting to see what the Mets do in building out the rest of the roster and sort of how many spots there are for someone who's, a bat first kind of player. I think some of the things we've heard Steve Cohen say this year might be influenced by his conversations that totally didn't happen with David Stearns before the hiring was official. Right.
Yes, of course that would never happen.
But, we've heard him talk about seeing success around the league with, teams that are a little bit younger, teams that are super athletic. And it's not that Vientos isn't younger athletic, but, I still think he's the hardest player to fit into a roster the way the game is right now. And look, if he goes out and he's 20, 30% better than league average as a hitter, even if it is a 300 on base, 5-something slugging way of getting there, then there is always room for that kind of a hitter on a major league roster, no matter what is going on in the game. So I don't know. I don't know where he lands. But at least we've gotten a little glimpse lately that says, well, maybe he can give you more than Vogelbach gave you this year.
Right.
It's just the bar needs to be a little bit higher than 2023 Daniel Vogelbach.
Yes. As somebody who loves Vogelbach, I want to defend him here, but I really can't do that.
The super likable guy who I feel like is a lock to get non-tendered.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Although, I mean, I will argue that if he was used properly, I think he still has a role on this team next season. But I don't have confidence that he'll be used properly or that there won't be somebody who is brought in who will make his skill set redundant.
Right.
And that just leaves Chris's favorite player of all time, Ronnie Mauricio, as the last of the baby Mets. Ronnie Mauricio, who has cost me $10 because of my $5 per Mauricio home run, dollars for dingers pledge, which I just put in there to make Chris laugh, essentially. So I got $10 going to the National Domestic Violence Hotline because of you, Chris. So you're welcome.
There we go.
Yeah. There you go. But what have you thought of Mauricio's very, very short tenure with the Mets so far?
When he gets a hold of one, it is it's a no doubt situation.
Real granted, Stefani situation. You're right.
Yes. Yeah. So obviously he ripped that double in his first major league game. There's only been the two home runs, but they were both no doubters. But the overall offensive production is less than you would like to see. I don't know. I mean, he's stolen 6 bases. He's shown that he has real power in games, and that's not something that you can teach. So I think he's looked better in the field than anybody might have expected, including me. I didn't have as strong a take on him in his time in Binghamton last year as Alvarez, but he didn't stand out as an excellent defender or anything in the games that I saw there.
He's also playing what he self-describes as his least favorite infield position. He said he would rather be playing shortstop or third base rather than second. So the fact that he's doing this, not that he's not lighting the world on fire, but the fact that his third preference he's doing this well with this early in his major league career is an encouraging sign for his future success.
Yeah, I certainly hope. It's such a small amount of playing time that he's gotten at the major league level. It would be nice if he had a big series this weekend, finish the year as like a league average hitter. In this brief stint. But again, yeah, I think I touched on this last time we did an episode, but the strikeout rate hasn't gotten dramatically worse in the jump from AAA to the big leagues. It is several percentage points worse. Don't get me wrong, but it's been a little more manageable than maybe would have been expected. And I think I'd be curious to see what he does with a whole lot of exposure to major league pitching. And going into spring training, I know we constantly harp on the fact that spring training stats are meaningless, but even if the Mets go out and get some new players and Mauricio, Beatty, Vientos are not expected to be starters on the opening day roster next year, I would think they're going to get tons of playing time in major league spring training games.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So just kind of watching what happens there. I think that'll be interesting. The fact that he cut 5 percentage points off his strikeout rate between 22 and Binghamton in this year in Syracuse was encouraging. And if he can kind of get that strikeout rate closer to 20 than 30% at the major league level, then I think we start to maybe be able to buy into this being an exciting major league player. So,
yeah, agreed. Yeah,
we can hope.
Yeah, we can certainly hope. I have nothing to add to that. I retweet everything you say, or re-X whatever the fuck we're saying now for that for that hellscape of website I don't even go to anymore. Anyway, anything else to say about the Baby Mets, or are we ready to move on to our music section?
No, I think I'm Mets'd out.
So before we get to our music recommendations, Chris, have you seen the latest MLB collaboration with a famous rock and roll group?
I'm not sure.
So it was announced, I don't know if it was yesterday, today, it was sometime this week, that MLB and the Rolling Stones are doing something special together, which is that the vinyl copies of their newest album, there will be individual covers for each of the 30 Major League Baseball teams. Essentially, the album covers are, for this version at least, the album is called Hackney Diamonds, and the album covers are basically the Rolling Stones tongue logo with sort of where the upper lip would be a three-letter abbreviation for the team. So the Mets, obviously, NYM. And then the color of the tongue and the letters are the team's colors. So there will be a special Mets vinyl edition of the Rolling Stones Hackney Diamonds. How many should I sign you up for?
Do I have to listen to it?
No. No.
I mean, it's always so awkward to have to. I mean, look, nobody should feel bad for the Rolling Stones. And obviously,
never.
They accomplished a lot. But we happen to like a lot of bands that are making records that are interesting and good decades into their careers. You know, I don't want to toot our own horns here, but I'd like to say we have some pretty good taste with that sort of thing. It's very awkward when a band that achieved legendary status is still putting out music like that. But hey, wouldn't it be a hard vinyl to keep in mint condition as a collector's item?
That's true also, yeah.
So.
I would definitely buy Sticky Fingers, the Mets cover on it, or Let It Bleed. Yeah, any of the Mick Taylor era albums, I would be happy. I mean, I probably still wouldn't buy it, but I could understand why somebody would want to buy a great Rolling Stones album with a Mets specific cover. What I don't understand is why people would be excited to buy the new Rolling Stones album with a Mets cover.
Right.
Anyway, enough of that shit. What's your music pick for this week?
So I am, I guess I'm going to, I don't know, it's not quite tying OCs, but, and it's certainly not tying King Gizzard, but I'm dipping back into the Frankie and the Witchfinger as well. It's been a while since I recommended either of the two previous albums that I recommended on the show. But at some point this month, either 2 or 3 weeks ago, they put out a record called Data Doom. And it's got one I really do love is start to finish. But it's got two songs on it. The opener, Empire, is the name of that song. And the third track, Electricide. Those are two songs that Electricide had been out as a single for quite a while before the full album came out. But it's a ripper. It just kind of blew me away. Got to hear it live last fall at Desert Days. And the, you know, that first track, I believe is how they opened their set there last year. So I've had some ability to listen to this stuff this year, but getting it in the full album form, and then just really being happy with what they did with the rest of the record. 9 songs, 41 minutes, and a nice mix. It never really like gets slow by any means, but there's still some variations in sort of the intensity along the way. And yeah, I'm glad that they got it all out there, and I highly recommend it, especially for driving. If you're a driver. So yeah,
it's an excellent record. It's been in pretty steady rotation for me as well for the last few weeks. So yeah, excellent choice. And that was actually, if you didn't pick that, that would have been my pick this week as well.
Ah, nice. There we go.
but I figured that might be the case. And so I decided to go elsewhere. I've been on a real new music kick lately. The last couple of weeks, I've been trying to catch up on some of the 2023 albums that I hadn't heard yet. And you know, as with any year, there's always so much good stuff that comes out. But I love to find these little records that sort of fall through the cracks. And I'm taking another page from your book, Chris, and I'm going with an Australian artist here. But I don't know if it's one that you're aware of. Do you know who M.F. Tomlinson is?
I do not.
I saw this album listed somewhere. I did a search for things like, you know, best album of 2023. A bunch of websites did like a best records of the first half of the year. Pitchfork, I think it was just today, did the best records you may have missed so far. And so I saw this M.F. Tomlinson record called We Are Still Wild Horses. And it's only 4 tracks, but the last track is like 20-something minutes long. And I'm going to say ostensibly it's a singer-songwriter record, but there's really interesting instrumentation. And some of the instrumentation at times veers almost into jazz territory, which is not common of like a singer-songwriter type record. And as a noted jazz fan, this is like exactly my shit. I love when there is music that is melodic and that is relatively straightforward, but around the edges of it gets really interesting instrumentally. And that's how I felt listening to this record. The title track is the 20-something minute long track on there. And that is the final track on the album. It is the album somehow flies by. It's like 40 minutes, and it's only 4 tracks. But it does have a really nice sort of pace to it. But the first track is called A Cloud. And about halfway through listening to it, I was listening to this while I was reading, and I put the book down and just listened. And for me to put a book down while I'm listening to music is quite a compliment. So yeah, I felt very, very good about this record. Definitely kind of a moody, mellow record at times, but each song, like I said, has really interesting instrumentation. All the songs build to really interesting places. And yeah. Always good to give some love to another Australian artist. So We Are Still Wild Horses by M.F. Tomlinson. That's my pick of the week. And as always, we thank you all for listening. We thank you for another season of Mets Baseball. Before we go, though, we have to remind you, you're hearing this on Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, September 30th, 4 p.m., the Ebbs Brewery, Dollars for Dingers. It's going to be amazing. We have more prizes that keep coming out of the woodwork. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this yet, so I may have to edit this out, but SNY is donating a signed Gary, Keith, and Ron baseball to us to give away. And so if you're anything like me, that's where a lot of your raffle tickets are going to go on Saturday. But this season, we have already raised over $8,000 for the National Domestic Violence Hotline, putting our total at close to $50,000 over the course of Dollars for Dingers. It's a wonderful, wonderful cause. Please come out if you can. Saturday, 4 p.m., Ebbs Brewery. Come say hi. We'll have a beer together. It'll be lovely. And yeah, until then, go to homerandapplesauce.com where there is Dollars for Dingers information as well as information about all of our other podcasts. And I should say, if you become a patron before Friday at 11:59 p.m., you will be entered into an exclusive raffle drawing for one of the prospect sign balls we have at Dollars for Dingers. So no reason not to check out Dollars for Dingers and all we have going on there. Thank you for your support. Chris is on social media at Chris McShane. I'm on social media at Brian Needs a Nap. And until next time, let's go Mets.